This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to Washington Watch. Coming up, President Trump continues to shake up the political establishment, announcing the U.S. will be pulling out of Obama's Paris Accord on global warming. We'll talk more about that later with Dr. Cal Beisner. In the meantime, stand by for more protest. While Americans chose to break with the liberal policies of the Obama administration, liberal agitators will stop at nothing to prevent the new administration from undoing those bad policies, including stalking the new chairman of the FCC. The chairman, Ajit Pai, will join me in just a moment. And last week, the World Congress of Families met in Budapest, Hungary. The Hungarian prime minister, who is challenging Europe to embrace traditional pro-family policies, opened the session. FRC's Peter Sprigg and Travis Weber were there, and they spoke at the Congress. They will be here a little later and speak on Washington Watch. Also, Planned Parenthood released their annual report earlier this week. The bottom line, abortions up, profits up, medical services down, number of patients down, credibility in the tank. FRC's Irina Grosu is here with the details a little later. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. And by the way, if you miss anything on your way home, you can catch it later. It's all archived right there at TonyPerkins.com. All right, folks, I know you're already picking up on this, but if not, I hope you see the pattern that has emerged since the election. Despite the American people rejecting the liberal policies of the Obama era and choosing a different path, agitators, some of them paid, and the funders on the left are doing everything they can to prevent the Trump administration from undoing the Obama policies. Whether it's lawsuits, to protests, to sit-ins, to marches, to demonstrations, to what I can only describe as stalking, they are relentless. And by the way, we need to be relentless too. Well, one of the agencies that has been in the crosshairs of the left is the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC. Now, what is it that the left does not want the FCC to change? Well, it's what was called net neutrality. With us now is the new chairman of the FCC, Chairman Ajit Pai. He's returning regulatory sanity to the agency. Chairman Pai, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Oh, thank you so much for having me back on.
It's been an interesting couple of months since you've become chairman. You seem to be pretty popular.
Good choice of adjectives. Interesting is the right way to put it. But, you know, I had 4.5 years in the minority to think about what we could do and would do if we were in the majority. And lightning struck, and we've been hitting the ground running the last 4 months.
Before we get into kind of the tactics of the left, because I think it's very instructive, and I think people need to be aware of it. First, let's take on the topic. What has the left so exercised here? The net neutrality, explain that to our listeners, what that's all about.
Net neutrality involves the basic concept of internet regulation. Do you want the government regulating how the internet is structured, how it operates, or do you want the private sector, the market, to make those decisions? And to me, at least, we had a free market for about 20 years, starting in 1996 until 2015, and our internet economy became the envy of the world without the U.S. government micromanaging it. And that changed a couple of years ago, and all we've simply proposed to do in the current administration is go back to the way it was prior to 2015. And for a variety of reasons, some folks in some political quarters have decided that this is simply unacceptable to them, and they're going to resist it by any means necessary.
I mean, this is classic. I mean, you're not the only agency that's just trying to return things to the way they were, status quo, going back to the way they were before the Obama administration. But you would think that you're taking bread from children, you're waxing the stairs at the nursing homes, and you're doing all of these crazy things that is going to lead to mass destruction.
And it's just amazing. That kind of overstatement, I think, is disregarded by most Americans, at least the ones I talk to. They're more interested in getting internet access in rural areas and and making sure their kids and their grandparents have the technology that will help them improve their lives. And they're not focused on this inside the beltway special interest debate about who can persuade the FCC to dispense the most goodies or regulate the internet. They're focused on what's going to produce value for the American consumer, and that's been my lodestar since I got into office on January 23rd too.
And that's that's pretty much in keeping, I think, with the vision of the Trump administration: free markets, allowing the markets to determine and remove government regulation and government interference as much as possible.
Absolutely. And, when you explain that, look, we didn't have the government regulating the internet for a while, and look what happened. Google and Amazon and Facebook and Netflix, all these companies that are now global powerhouses, they achieved that through the free market. They didn't need the government regulating the internet in order to achieve success. And it's sort of odd for a Republican chairman to saying that President Clinton got it right in 1996 with a light-touch market-based regulation, but that's exactly the position I'm advocating, and makes it all the more ironic that some folks, at least, are criticizing me for my political views, when in fact I'm representing what was for decades a bipartisan consensus.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. The FCC chairman, Ajit Pai, my guest, has been on before. And Chairman, as you pointed out at the beginning, you were in the minority before of the five commissioners, and you have taken consistently market-based approaches to how the government should regulate, and to the degree it should, our communications. But were you anticipating the type of reaction that you have gotten when you took over as chairman, and as you've pointed out, simply trying to return things to status quo the way they were before?
Well, I knew that some of these issues, like net neutrality, generate a lot of passion and interest, and so I was expecting that. It's unfortunate, though, that some of the criticism has gone, in my view at least, over the line, and, getting death threats over email, or, folks at my home, so that my kids can't play in the front yard. I mean, that's the kind of thing that, I understand it, and people have the right to say and do pretty much anything, but let's just focus on the facts here, and let's keep things as civil as we can. And we might disagree at the end of the day, but let's live up to, the better angels of our nature, so to speak, as opposed to the lowest common denominator. And that's something I said when I was in the minority, and that's a principle I embrace now that I'm in the majority.
But have we seen the crossing of a line where it comes to civility when we have disagreements over these issues? It just seems to me we're seeing this across the board, whether it was the march on Washington the weekend after the president was sworn in, that there seems to be this, inability to accept the fact that we had an election and the outcome may not be what some wanted in this country, and they are dead set on trying to stop the changes that are being implemented by this administration, again, just to undo what the Obama administration did.
I have to say, there is a tenor to the debate, these days at least, that is unlike anything I've ever seen, and whatever the reason for it is, I retain that belief that America is best served when we embrace what Lincoln talked about in his second inaugural, that once the election is done, let's move forward together if we can. Yes, he put it, with malice toward none, with charity for all, with firmness in the right, as God gives us to see the right. Let us try to finish the work we are in. I mean, that is honestly the credo that has distinguished America from most societies throughout history, is that we don't let elections define everything about who we are. We move forward together, and we accept that people are going to have different views. And so, again, it might be a naive hope on my part, but I continue to believe that the FCC can and should be an oasis from some of the more politically tinged animus that we see out there in the discourse.
Well, Chairman Pai, let's talk a little bit about the FCC and beyond the net neutrality. There's a comment period where you're taking comments on that, people are weighing in, and then the commission will go forward with a decision. What else can we anticipate from the FCC in the months ahead?
Two big things that I should mention. One is making sure that broadband, that high-speed internet access, reaches all parts of the country. and that we have more competition in the broadband marketplace. I grew up in a small town called Parsons, Kansas, about 3 hours south of Kansas City, and I'm keenly aware that in my hometown and in many other places like it, people don't have the access to the Internet and to other technologies that we can sometimes take for granted here in Washington. And that's why on my second day, full day of office, after President Trump designated me the chairman, I gave a speech in which I said, I want us to focus first and foremost on closing this digital divide, making sure that people in rural America and even low-income Americans in urban America have the ability to have what I've called digital opportunity. And so we've already taken steps over the last 4 months to help create an environment in which companies are going to be willing to build out, to take the risk, to spend the capital in rural America, and hopefully there will be more to come. The second thing is making sure that we have rules in place that promote the public interest. Just today, for instance, I announced that we're going to start a process for thinking about blue alerts. And so many of your listeners are probably familiar with amber alerts when there's a child who's been abducted. Right. Or is otherwise in danger. We're considering doing something for law enforcement. So if there's an imminent, credible threat to a law enforcement officer, an officer has gone missing or has been killed, we're thinking about putting out blue alerts to let the public know that there's some bad actor out there and to get information about what to do. And different things like that to help people with disabilities communicate better, to help elderly Americans get online access and the tools they need, to help minority communities gain hope in this digital era. Those are the kinds of things we're doing that don't get a lot of headlines, but they are the bread and butter issues in the daily lives of millions of Americans. And hopefully in the time to come, folks out there, your listeners and everybody will be able to see that.
Of course, one of the areas that people most readily identify the FCC with are the responsibilities that they have to, basically police the airwaves when it comes to indecency on the airwaves. How much of a how big of a percentage is that of the workload at the FCC?
It's a big portion. That is one of the traditional responsibilities of the agency, and we get complaints every now and then about issues like that, and we look at them as best we can and make the appropriate judgment. And so that's something that I'm focused on both as a regulator but also as a parent of two young children. I have a five-year-old and a three-year-old, and as they grow, and I'm sure this is the case for you and for other parents out there, you're keenly aware of the information that they ingest, because they're like sponges, so to speak. They'll soak up all the good stuff, but also potentially some of the bad stuff. And so it's an important function, and so long as Congress gives us that responsibility, we're duty-bound to enforce it.
Well, I think every FCC chairman should have young children. That'll make them even more sensitive. So, Mr. Chairman, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon, and I look forward to watching what the FCC does in the months ahead.
Well, thanks so much. I've been incredibly blessed, and no small part of that is having the support of folks like you and your listeners. Thank you for what you do to keep folks informed, and stay tuned in for more coming from the agency.
All right, Chairman Pai, thanks so much. All right, folks, to find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and follow links over. Look, I'm going to tell you, I trust what this guy's going to do. Right? I've watched him. He's stood alone. He's stood courageously, and he's got good, solid principles to stand on. All right, when we come back, Budapest, Hungary was the host of the World Congress of Families. Peter Sprigg, Travis Weber from FRC were both there. They spoke. They'll be here and they'll speak right after this.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms, in association with American Family Studios, introduces Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrades. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Order yours today at RyanSecretAgent.com.
Mommy, look, it says God on this dollar from your purse.
Wow, I'm impressed that you saw that. And did you see what it says about God?
In God we trust.
That's right. And guess what? It says in God we trust on every piece of American money.
Why?
Well, I guess it's because our nation was founded with God's help. And sometimes we need a reminder to trust Him.
The American Family Association invites you to help us make In God We Trust more than a slogan. Since 1977, the American Family Association has been a voice to remind America that the blessings of our nation have come from God's gracious hand. Request your free In God We Trust wristband today and order more to give away at afa.net/trustgod. That's afa.net/trustgod. Get 40 and help the American Family Association celebrate our 40th anniversary.
Now, what were you doing in my purse?
Uh-oh.
A pardon is the promise of freedom from imprisonment regardless of guilt. Hi, Kim Cotola for Cradle My Heart today. Such a promise can be so powerful for women like Lisa. Trauma after abortion led from a suburban upbringing to drug addiction and prostitution on the streets of Washington, D.C. Lisa felt doomed by the weight of her wrongs. Yet her story shows the power of God's love no matter how broken our lives have become. God's word promises that our sin does not equal a death sentence. Through repentance in Christ, Lisa learned that Jesus paid it all. We are forever right with God. We are fully free. The only question is this: how will we respond to God's great gift of love? Find a network of Christ-centered organizations offering help for unplanned pregnancy and hope after abortion at CradleMyHeart.org. Saving lives and healing hearts after abortion, one story at a time. CradleMyHeart.org.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. All right, the 11th annual World Congress, or the 11th Congress, World Congress of Families concluded last week. Its 4-day family summit in Budapest, Hungary. FRC's senior fellow for policy studies, Peter Sprigg, and Travis Weber, the director of the Center for Religious Liberty, both were there. They spoke at various events, and they join us now with an update. Peter, Travis, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony.
Thanks, Tony.
So, jet lag, you guys back on normal schedule now?
Still waking up kind of early because they're 6 hours ahead there, but yeah, pretty much back to normal.
Well, that's good. That way you get to work earlier. All right. Give us an overview of the summit, its purpose, and what it focused on.
Well, the World Congress of Families, as you said, is an international event that's happened 11 times now since 1999, roughly once every 2 years. But in Hungary, and each of these events, which have been held in different locations, has a local organizing committee. What was unique about the Budapest event was that the Hungarian government was itself the local organizing committee, and that's never happened before. That shows just how pro-family the current Hungarian government is, though. And so they had the traditional World Congress of Families, which covers a range of family issues, but it was preceded by what they called the Budapest Demographic Forum, a one-day event focusing specifically on population issues. And then they also had a concurrent One of Us forum, which focused specifically on pro-life issues, and then concluded on Sunday with a family festival in downtown Budapest. So it was really a number of different topics that were covered and really well done.
Travis, I've met recently with some Hungarian officials and quite surprised governmental officials how eager they are to establish policies that promote traditional family values.
Tony, this is this is something that is good to see. We've seen this as consistent with the summit in terms of statements by Hungarian government officials who spoke at the summit. The Prime Minister Viktor Orban spoke at the Demographic Forum and outlined the challenges if Western Europe and and the nations of Central Europe where Hungary is, do not address their declining birth rate issues in the future. So this is something that we're excited to see Hungary is addressing, and we want to encourage them and other countries as they stand against the secular anti-family forces in Western Europe, in the EU institutions, and elsewhere.
Well, and those forces they have been emboldened through the Obama administration, both through our foreign diplomatic corps, and of course George Soros has a presence over there. That's where he's originally from, but his money is actually fighting against this government.
That's right. George Soros is actually the founder of Central European University, I believe it's called, which is located there in Budapest, and is promoting some of his leftist values at the same time that that we have Prime Minister Orban's government and other pro-family groups promoting more traditional values. So there's definitely a struggle going on there as elsewhere.
Now, how many people participated in the Congress?
I'm not sure if they released a specific number. That I would say at the main session when the Prime Minister spoke, there were somewhere between 500 and 1,000 people probably present at that event. And it would be somewhere around that number.
And the goal of the Congress, what do they hope is the outcome of gathering these pro-family leaders from around the world?
Well, I think it's partly to facilitate networking, which it was, very helpful, to get ideas from each other about how we can work in our own countries to promote pro-family values, and to create solidarity and see, what we have in common with those in other countries and what we can learn from their successes and from their failures.
Now, Travis, both you and Peter had a chance to connect with some local churches. In fact, one of the largest churches in Europe. You did a little preaching while you were there.
I think you could call it that, perhaps. It was really neat that we got to connect with Faith Church. This is a large charismatic congregation headquartered in Budapest, but with locations throughout Hungary and even in the surrounding nations. It's become sort of a hub for that area of Europe. And the doubly encouraging thing is that these folks are very engaged and aware of the issues that they are facing in their society related to anti-God views of human sexuality, of the family, all the same things we're fighting here pretty much, and they're ready to take a public stand for it. They were eager to hear what we had to say about how Christians should engage on these issues, so Peter and I got to speak to a number of students from the church and then address the main congregation, also conduct some radio interviews, and I think this is a great chance to really work with them, try to serve them, care for them, and enable them to be Christians standing up as salt and light in their own country.
So is there a sense that they have an understanding of the importance as Christians to be involved and be a voice to their government?
I believe they do. And, they're going to encourage the good policies they see coming out of the government and stand with a Christian witness in other areas where they need to see policy changes. But one of the interesting things as I spoke with them was the fact that this church was started in 1979. Pastor Nemeth and the individuals involved at that time were persecuted, monitored, really controlled
by the communist regime.
By the communist regime. Mm-hmm. And, they had to go through that. And now the source of the opposition has changed, but it's still opposition. And this is the really crucial lesson for us here as we understand what it's like to be Christians standing up in the culture for us in the United States, for where many would say we really have no opposition. We need to take a lesson from Christians who face opposition in other countries and understand that there is opposition. The source is just different.
Yeah. Well, a fascinating report from you guys. Glad you're able to go there. Thankful for the impact that you made, and glad you're back home safely. Peter and Travis, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony.
Thanks, Tony.
Job well done, guys. All right, coming up next, Planned Parenthood has released its annual report. They did it earlier this week, and a shocker, it's business as usual, more abortions. Well, but they're losing ground in some areas. FRC's Director of the Center for Human Dignity, Irina Grosu, is here next. Don't go away. We're back with more.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, the markets continue to weather all the geopolitical worries in Washington. They did that all month last month, and it looks like they could be on track to doing that again this month. Now, the difference this month is there's going to be some investigations that are likely to come to the light as opposed to just talk of investigations. And that certainly might have a little bit more impact on the markets and a little bit more difficult for them to weather any kind of storm as a result. There is now going to be situations that is going to be pushing back on the legislative process, specifically tax reform. So we will have to watch and see how things go this month. But right now, it looks as though there's no reason why the markets won't continue to weather this little bit of uncertainty. Now, in the middle of all this, we got ADP job numbers coming in at 253,000. By the way, they were expecting something a lot lower than that. Last month, it was 177, and they were expecting something around 170 this month. So that is a huge shot in the arm for the economy, and it looks like hiring is still maintaining some pretty high levels. And obviously, that is one of the most important things as we move forward in our economy.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, the website, tonyperkins.com. Hey, folks, let me just remind you that the Family Research Council is the ministry that puts forth Washington Watch, and it is funded, supported strictly by private contributions by folks across this country. So if you'd like to be a part of partnering with the Family Research Council to bring you Washington Watch each day, Monday through Friday, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. All right, as I mentioned earlier, breaking news this afternoon, just a couple hours ago, the president announced that America is pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord. We're going to talk about that in the next segment with Dr. Cal Beisner. But first, earlier this week, the Planned Parenthood released its 2015-2016 annual report. Now, this was only days after the release of new shocking undercover video that shows just how deplorable this organization is. With me now to break down the report and give us an update on what Planned Parenthood is doing with the $500 million they received from taxpayers is Irina Grosu. She is the director of the Center for Human Dignity here at the Family Research Council. Irina, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. It's always a pleasure.
Well, I know you've been analyzing the report. You've written a couple of pieces about it. What have you discovered?
Well, first of all, this report was a long time coming. It was supposed to be released at the end of January, just as Planned Parenthood's other annual reports, except this year it wasn't. So it was pushed back. We don't know why. And now we have our hands on it. And we see, one, the number of abortions has gone up by almost 4,300 abortions in that last year. And so they are now at 328,000 abortions in 2015-2016. At the same time, government funding is at its highest in this past report. It increased by $900,000, so it's now at $554 million. And also their total revenue is at its highest in its entire history, and it's at $1.35 billion. And so we're seeing more abortions, more funding, more revenue, and yet at the same time, all the other services that they claim to do, they have dropped and decreased. And so, for example, cancer screenings have dropped. Abortions now outnumber breast exams for the first time in their own history. And even prenatal services dropped by half in 1 year alone. So they were doing 17,000 prenatal services, and they're down to about 9,000 now. And so we're seeing a drop in other services, an increase in abortions, an increase in funding.
Well, of course, abortion is the backbone of what they do, and that's clearly where they make their money. How can the Cecile Richards continue to claim that abortions is just a small percentage of what they do?
I have no idea, because when we look at the numbers of any services they give to pregnant women, of those, 96% of the services to pregnant women are abortions. And when you break down between adoption referrals, abortion, miscarriage services, prenatal care, abortion makes the bulk of it. And so it's a play on numbers. I saw a satiric piece that said, well, what if a serial killer only 3% of the serial killer's time is spent killing people? Well, when we break down Planned Parenthood's numbers, we see that this is the bulk of their profit and the bulk of their actions towards women who come to their facility.
Now, they clearly are concerned about their future. When you look at the fact that about half $1 billion flows into their coffers from taxpayers, we've had this steady flow of undercover videos that has shown them trafficking in human baby body parts, and very calloused in the way that they have dealt with that. Mm-hmm. Congress moving to defund them, the select committee that looked into it. Now we have the budget reconciliation measure that has the defunding of Planned Parenthood. Their future is very tenuous.
They should be concerned. One, they're closing clinics left and right. In fact, they already closed at least 15 or 20 more facilities. Even the numbers of patients who are going there is going down. So in the last year, 100,000 less. They had 100,000 less patients. And really, if and hopefully when Congress defunds Planned Parenthood, we saw in their report that there is a $541 million of unrestricted net assets that they can just apply to whatever they want. But they should not be given money, our taxpayer money, for all the things that they do. And we should have no part in funding Planned Parenthood. And so they should be very concerned. I think that, you know, with the House passage of the defund portion, and now we're really looking at the Senate to do the same, we have a momentum. And we could see that their numbers in terms of services, except abortions, are going down. Their facilities are closing. And I think that all of those videos that CMP and David DeLighten and Live Action put out have really put a dent in them, because if anyone is as callous to laugh at eyeballs falling into laps, then that's exactly what they're talking about at the conferences. This is a huge issue, and I think it's finally coming around. And there are still about 15 criminal referrals that were done by the select panel, and so we're hoping under the Trump administration those will actually be taken up, and they should have more trouble coming their way.
All right. Irina, thanks so much, as always, for joining us and updating us on the latest with Planned Parenthood.
Thanks so much, Tony.
All right, folks. To find out more, actually, you can see one of the pieces that Irina wrote. You can go to TonyPerkins.com. By the way, I didn't mention the fact that they spend millions. I think it was $13 million. I was looking for the number of what they spent in the last election cycle. So they've got plenty of money. All right, when we come back, Cal Bisner is here to talk about the president pulling out of the Paris Accord.
Girls having privacy in school showers, locker rooms, and bathrooms is a no-brainer, right? Not everybody thinks so. Fairfax County, Virginia has become ground zero in the efforts to impose transgender ideology on American school children. The school system there is one of the largest in the United States, and its close proximity to Washington, D.C. has made it a target for the efforts to mainstream this radical ideology. Even after the Trump administration revoked Obama's directive threatening the nation's public schools, the fight continues at the state and district level. But parents and concerned citizens can fight back. In a recent panel discussion, three different perspectives from a school board member, a concerned parent, and an attorney are presented. They expose the tactics used by the transgender lobbyists and explore the strategies parents and taxpayers can use to fight back. Discover how to implement a 5-point plan to educate, explain, engage, empower, and elect in order to combat the transgender ideology in public schools. Visit frc.org/events to view this vital discussion.
News travels fast and it's constantly changing. Keep up on onenewsnow.com. It's a news site featuring the latest breaking stories from across the U.S. and around the world. OneNewsNow.com has well-researched articles from a conservative evangelical perspective with hot topics of concern to Christians right now. Get the full story when you visit OneNewsNow.com.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope.
Our great country continues to get slammed by natural disasters, hurricanes and tornadoes, flooding. I mean, it's everywhere from Texas, South Carolina, to Georgia, Mississippi, all throughout the country, our country has suffered. Here's where you and I get a chance to be a glimpse of Jesus. It is so cool to meet a homeowner who has gone to no fault of their own. Their world has been turned upside down, and you get a chance to bless them. You know, we tarp roofs and do chainsaw work, and we gut homes that flooded right after disaster with our rapid response team. And then we also look to rebuild homes with 8 Days of Hope, like we've done 12 different areas of the country. 1,800 homes, $25 million of damage. People all the time say, man, you're good. Well, we're not that good, but he is great. Be a part of something unique. 8 Days of Hope.
Learn more at 8daysofhope.com.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, in just a moment, we're going to talk about the breaking news. President Trump withdrawing from the Paris Climate Accord. Dr. Cal Beiser is going to be joining us. But first, I want to go back. I found those numbers. Planned Parenthood. And this is, you know, in spite of the scandals, they've still managed to squeeze $554.6 million out of federal, state, and local governments. All right? Now, you look at their numbers, they had a $77 million profit. $77 million that they had in the black. They need your money? They need my money? I don't think so. It's a questionable organization, right? And we've seen a steady flow for almost 2 years of the videos of what they've been doing. It's time to defund Planned Parenthood. And this is one of the things you really need to lean on your U.S. senators, because some of them are him-hauling now about passing the reconciliation bill and going ahead and eliminating not just the funding of Planned Parenthood, but Obamacare. That's the main measure that's in the reconciliation bill. House passed it. It's over in the Senate. And they're saying, well, I'm not so sure. In fact, I talked with one senator. He said, well, you know, I know we did this 2 years ago, but it was a messaging vote. Really? I don't think you bothered to tell the American people that. So you should contact your two senators and encourage them to vote for the reconciliation bill that guts Obamacare and defunds at least 80%+ of Planned Parenthood. And here's another reason why they can afford it. In the last three election cycles, Planned Parenthood's political arm sank $38 million into electing candidates. Now think about this for a moment. $38 million. This is a pretty good business deal, okay? They invest $38 million and they get $550 some million back. It's pretty good return on that investment. That, folks, that shouldn't be that way. In fact, I've spoke to several members, and I may even bring this to the president. If an organization receives federal money by way of a grant or anything, if they receive federal money, they should not be able to put money into political campaigns. You say, well, that's a violation of First Amendment. No, though they can get involved in campaigns, but they cannot also choose to take government money. Now you say, well, but they're separated. Money's fungible. All right, if I don't have to spend, you know, if I can get government money to do A, then I don't have to raise money to do A. I can raise money to do B. And so that's what Planned Parenthood is doing. They don't have to raise money to do this over here. So they're free to raise money to do other things. If they had to, you know, raise that $550 million, they wouldn't be doing some of the other things that they're doing. They couldn't afford to. They'd have to focus on their mission. But they've got a gravy train. And so any entity, and it's not, this could be across the board. Not that there's many conservative groups that are getting funding, but regardless, if you are getting direct funding from the government, you should not be able to have an entity tied to your organization that makes political contributions. I just don't think it should be that way, because you can take the money you're getting from the government and use it to protect the money that you want more of. All right. Anyway, all right, the president earlier today announced that America is pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord. Right, and here's a short clip of what he had to say. I listened to his speech. Here is, this is a very short clip, so listen closely now. Listen, here it comes. Here's what the president said earlier.
I was elected to represent the citizens of Pittsburgh. Not Paris.
Now, I have to say, I like that line. I think it was a good line. This was very controversial, all right? And there's going to be a lot of, look, I was pulling up on my computer the weather forecast. I wanted to see what the weather was. And, of course, the banner is, this was yesterday, and it was continuing today, that the president may pull out of climate accord. What does this mean for the future of the world? As if, I mean, this stuff is insanity. But you look at the number of jobs we were going to lose if we went forward with this climate accord, and how the greatest abusers of the environment would continue to abuse the environment. I commend the president for wading right into this. And again, I thought that was a great line. He said, I was elected to represent. And he mentioned the miners and others who have been, I mean, just viciously savaged by the policies of the Obama administration. Well, this is a topic that we've talked about quite a bit on this program, because I think it is so indicative of big government and wrongheaded government, of trying to go after things that they have no ability to actually effectively change, while they ignore the things that they should be and could do. Well, joining me now to discuss this in greater detail is Dr. Cal Beisner. He is the founder and national spokesman of the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation, and has been a frequent guest here. We talk about this issue. Cal, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, thanks very much. And what a great day to celebrate. This is tremendous.
Yeah, the president wading right into this and making clear, and I've had some conversations with members of his cabinet about this issue, and of course there was some pushback from some, not many in his cabinet, but some people associated with his administration. But, this is what he said he was going to do, and he's doing it.
Yeah, he is. I think it's a great day. What he's really done is called the bluff of the world leaders who are really trying to use this climate agreement basically to attack American prosperity, because they know, as well as President Trump knows, that complete implementation of the Paris Climate Agreement would reduce global average temperature in the year 2100 by less than 0.2 degrees Celsius.
And he said that
today. At a price that's just unbelievably high, $70 to $140 trillion. That's, you know, the author of the book, The Art of the Deal, recognizes that's not a good deal.
Yeah, and he in his comments, he insisted that he cares deeply about the environment. He's a conservationist. He wants to make sure that things are, you know, we're good stewards. But he said that this deal would punish the United States.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case, because, frankly, it doesn't require anything significant of the world's biggest real polluters, those who emit the real pollutions from coal-burning power plants, like fly ash and oxides of sulfur and nitrogen and so on. Those are the real polluters. Those are China and India, and they're not required to do anything until 2030. And even at that point, it's not anything significant. But the U.S. front-loaded all of its commitments, or rather the Obama administration did, so that we would have to make huge changes by the year 2025 that would cost hundreds of billions of dollars and hundreds of thousands of jobs. That just didn't make any sense at all for the U.S.
So, Cal Bisner, with the United States pulling out of this accord, I mean, it was structured as a treaty, but it's not a treaty. We're pulling out of it. Should have been done as a treaty, but the former president knew he couldn't do that, so he did it through a back door.
Right.
Does this fall apart now that the United States pulls out?
Well, it's an interesting way to put the question. Does it fall apart? Was it ever even together? Because, frankly, none of it was enforceable, and all you had was nationally determined contributions, intended nationally determined contributions. And, frankly, the vast majority of the countries that signed those would never have stepped up to the plate and fulfilled those commitments. Only countries like the United States, which takes honesty and honor fairly seriously, would have done that. So the United States' exit from it is not really going to make any significant difference to global temperature, which is supposedly the rationale for this whole thing. But what it will do is take the wind out of the sails of those who are using this as an opportunity to transfer hundreds of billions of dollars from developed countries into the Swiss bank accounts of the thugs who rule the developing countries.
Well, Cal Bisner, let's talk for just a moment here. This has been an issue with some evangelicals, and the left has used this as a way to get into the evangelical community and say there's a division here.
Yes.
Let's talk about some of the practical effects of these types of policies that were being pursued under this accord, and how it hurts the poor, how it deprives some of the most needy of some of the basic essentials needed to have a high quality of life or a decent quality.
Yeah, that really is the main motivation that I've had throughout this whole thing. I mean, a scientific case against dangerous man-made global warming is, I think, compelling. But what motivates me on all of this is my care for the poor around the world. Agreements like this, not just the Paris Agreement, but previously the Kyoto Protocol, and anything, frankly, that would come close to replacing the Paris Agreement, what they do is they deprive the poor around the world of the abundant, affordable, reliable energy that is indispensable to their overcoming poverty and staying out of it. So it condemns them to more generations of suffering all of the things that come along with poverty. And there's no good reason for that, because this agreement wouldn't have made any significant difference to the environment, and it would only have prevented the poor from overcoming their poverty.
So, Dr. Beisner, what can we expect now? What are we going to see happen? I mean, we've seen with every move that the Trump administration has made to undo the policies of the Obama administration. We had the chairman of the FCC on earlier who's trying to just reverse the net neutrality, so-called net neutrality, yeah. and how they're picketing his house and peeking in his windows and stalking him. What can we anticipate the left is going to do?
Well, go apoplectic for one thing, of course. But they're going to try to paint Trump as a science denier, a climate denier, basically as a Neanderthal, ignorant man. The truth is that he's got the science right here. And frankly, all the calculations about how little cooling would come from this are assuming that the alarmist science is right. If it's wrong, if the warming from our CO2 emissions is even smaller, then the case is even worse. So Trump actually gave them the benefit of the doubt in his calculations on this. What we're going to see is attempts to continue to demonize those who question all of this and to say, oh, look, it's a matter of world leadership. You know, United States needs to continue leading on this. And I think President Trump addressed that pretty well in his comments. What he pointed out is the United States already leads the world in cleanliness in terms of preventing real pollution. It already leads the world in terms of increasing the prosperity of its citizens. And frankly, that's important for the environment because a clean, healthful, beautiful environment is a costly good. And wealthier people can afford more of that than poorer people can.
Well, and he also said that America comes first. And he is going, as I played that clip earlier, we said, I was elected to represent the people of Pittsburgh, not Paris. And he is doing exactly that by looking at America's interest as opposed to, you know, being in this global community that Barack Obama put us into.
And as president, that's absolutely appropriate. He was elected to represent the American people. As Christians, we want to do that, but we want to look beyond that. We want to look to the poor in the developing world. We want to look to, for instance, that average sub-Saharan African woman who spends 6 to 8 hours a day doing nothing but gathering wood and dried dung, which she uses as her primary cooking and heating fuels, smoke from which kills 2 to 4 million people a year, mostly women and young children, and causes upper respiratory diseases and eye infections to hundreds of millions of more, all of these things keeping them from rising out of poverty. So the truth is that while President Donald Trump is rightly protecting the American people first, as Christians, we have an even bigger vision than that. Yes, we want to protect Americans, but we also want to protect the poor around the world. And that's another reason why we should celebrate his decision to get us out of the Paris Climate Agreement.
Well, I would wholeheartedly agree. Dr. Cal Beisner, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Well, thank you very much, Tony. We've got lots of good info on this at cornwallalliance.org for your listeners.
All right. I'll encourage people to check it out. All right, folks, you heard that. Check out the website, tonyperkins.com. Follow the links over. Well, you know what that music means. It means we're out of time for today, but it also is a reminder of what the Apostle Paul said in Ephesians chapter 6. When we've done everything we can do, when we've prayed, when we've prepared for the battle, well, and you've taken your stand, you know what? Just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.